Welcome to episode 418 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how much the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps to make our world smaller and bring us closer together. Here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. My name is Sandy, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Donna, and George. Greece is famous for many things. The Olympics, the gods, the beautiful islands, feta cheese, and now the wedding of Elizabeth's sister. To witness this last event, Elizabeth and her family traveled to Crete by way of Athens, and we wanted to pick her brain about what travel to Greece is like now and to hear how our trip went. So let's get started. So I noticed right when you guys came back that Crete was in the news because they just had some massive flooding. So did you see that, or did you guys?
Wow. No, it was after we left, just a couple days after the last guests left. And like some of the places that were super flooded were places that the guests had been hiking just like days before. So it's a little weird. Yeah. I mean, it was terrible flood. It was the flooding was very fast, but it had been predicted. So there's like all this stuff in Greece about how nobody was really listening. And but obviously we always play that blame game, but it was really terrible disaster. The airport was chaos for a couple of days because the runways flooded.
Wow. Yeah, it looked like it was some pretty serious flash flooding. And
yeah, it was
caught unaware.
It's such a shame because it really is a beautiful island, and I can say that having just been there. So hopefully they'll be able to come back from it. So.
Well, I'm glad that you avoided that. Got out of there before that. So talk about how long were you there? This was not a short trip, right?
It was a short trip. It was a week. So we went Saturday to Saturday. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Yeah, I feel like that's a short trip, especially to go so far. Because from the
to East go to Coast, Europe, yeah.
Yeah. We had to fly to Atlanta, and then the Atlanta flight to Greece was 10 hours. And then the flight back from Athens was 12 hours because the winds. So it's not for the faint of heart. And I really don't recommend going for just a week. I mean, I just feel like if you're traveling that far, you should try to take more time. We did travel for just a week because we were going during the school year and for a family event. So my kids had to go. Well, they didn't have to go, but they wanted to go. So Marcus was missing school and he's a junior in high school. So that's not a great time to be missing school. So we sort of figured out the best way to optimize and tried to deal, you know, so that he would be okay at, you know, Monday at school. So we went Saturday to Saturday. So we left Saturday, arrived there Sunday, and then came back the following Saturday. So we weren't even really there a full week when you really think about it with that full travel day. A big mistake that I made in planning this trip, and I'll never do this to any client, was in my head, I'm like, I want to maximize the time in Athens for my kids and for Chris, because they've never been there. And there's so much history to Athens. The wedding was in the middle of the week, however, so it was on Tuesday. So we land on Sunday and I'm like, okay, so we'll spend one night in Athens and we'll do a tour that day. And then the next day we'll fly to Crete. And that's not the way I should have done it. We should have just flown directly to Crete and then spent the rest of the time in Athens after the wedding. It's an hour from the airport to downtown Athens, especially with traffic. And you don't land, because it's such a long flight, you don't land early in the morning like you do when you go to France or to the UK. So you land at 11:30 in the morning. So you you do a tour in the afternoon, you eat, and then basically the next morning you turn around and go back to the airport an hour. And then the airport on Crete is in Heraklion. The wedding was in Olunda, which is about an hour transfer from the airport. So it was a lot of driving that we probably didn't need to do. You know, if we had cut one of those airport trips out, that would have saved us a lot of time.
So could you fly to Crete? Not like you would have to still probably change in Athens, right?
Yeah, you do have to. Well, no, not necessarily. It depends on the airline you're flying. And I don't remember. The thing is, too, I sort of planned this trip kind of in twice. And so, because it was supposed to be last year.
Right.
And so when I planned it the first time, we were going to spend 2 nights in Athens to start, and that would have been fine. And so I think what I did was, instead of really rethinking the trip, I just went chop, chop, you know, and that was just not the smartest way to do it. But you can go all the way through to Crete. And I mean, you just, it, we might not have been able to fly Delta, which is my preferred airline. But, you know, sometimes that's also a sacrifice you have to make.
Should have done what Amy did and went on that awesome trip before the wedding.
if only my kid had to go to school. And that was the original thought, was we were going to do 2 weeks in Athens, because I was like, yay, I moved to next year. So Finley's out of high school, and Marcus had been at this private school where he could do everything online. And then he went to public school for this year. So I've given him a hard time ever since he made that decision. I was like, you've ruined our Greece trip.
This is all your fault.
Yeah. And I do think he had some regrets, because, you know, it was a bit of a rushed trip in many ways. And I think he, you know, he loves traveling, and it was a new place. And so
he'll go back.
I know.
He'll go back. Yeah.
Just like you did.
Exactly.
Yep.
This was my third time in Greece. So
yeah.
The last time was in 1998, however. So.
But you've been back.
Yes.
I know. I need to get back to Munich, because when I went, this is like side story, but when I was, you know, I had COVID and I had to spend 4 nights there. And when I was leaving, my dad was like, you know, you missed out. And then I was like, no, Dad, I'll go back. He's like, I always said I'd go back, and I never did. He was there in the army in the 60s. And I'm like, but Dad, I'm really going back.
I really will.
Yeah, I really mean it. Really, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I digress. So where did you guys stay in Greece? Was it?
So in Athens, we did two different hotels. And this is where my travel advisor genius came into play, because I did, what I decided to do was look at the tours that I wanted to do, figure out when we were going to do those, and then choose my hotel based on the starting points of the tours. So our first, the center of Athens is very walkable. Whether you're in the Plaka or in one of the other neighborhoods around there, you can get, you know, you can walk anywhere. But it can be, it's just how long is that walk? And I'm lazy. So for the first tour, it was the first night we stayed at the Moxy in Athens. And Moxy it's in the Marriott family. There's only a few of them. It's a fairly new brand, and they're all very hip. I mean, I guess you can kind of think of them as a loft kind of style hotels, maybe a little bit funkier. Like the check-in desk was the bar. Like,
right. Oh, I like that kind of.
Yes.
Hotel.
I was like, well,
it's kind of like appeals to millennials. Yes, kind of
100%. It has Instagrammable photograph spaces. And like this one had two big dog statues in the center area. And it also, they like to sort of serve as a gathering place for locals too. So, you know, sort of that they want their bar to be open to not just the people at the hotel, but the rooms are clean, comfortable, and actually decent. They were a decent size. It isn't like a tiny little room. You're not making that sacrifice, shall we say. So I really, for a downtown hotel, I thought it was great. And the kids liked how hip it was. And it was a great location for our tour. I will say we did a 3-hour walking tour and it didn't make a circle. So it started near our hotel, but it ended way on the other side, and we had to walk. Basically, it ended where our second Athens hotel was. And we had to walk all the way back to our hotel. It's about a 25-minute walk. But again, that's about as long as you'd need to walk from where, you know, wherever you choose your hotel. If it's downtown, that's about as long as you need to walk to get to any of the major sites.
So is it easy to find your way around in Athens and walk?
There is a subway system. I remember when I was there in 1998, they were still building it, and it was slow going, because every time they dig in Athens, they find something. You know, there's so much underneath.
Yeah.
The city.
Yeah.
So, and of course they have to stop, and then the government comes in and tells them, you know, so there are hotels and restaurants and things where they have glass floors so that you can see what's underneath it's awesome. Such an interesting place to be. It's not the world's most fascinating city. I mean, there's great interest spots, but it's a huge metropolitan area. It's a huge city. And most of the people who live there, and that's about a third of the population of Greece, are there to work. Like it's a city. It is definitely a working city. So I would maybe say it's kind of like going to Pittsburgh. You know, there's some interesting things to do there.
Oh my God. I was going to say that.
But no one, you know, no one necessarily wants to spend a lot of time there.
That's funny because I picture Athens as being like old buildings, like not modern city, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And it is. I mean, it's on a tectonic plate. So there aren't skyscrapers. So everything's kind of low. And then they have lots of rules about what, you know, about tearing buildings down. You can't do it anymore. So literally there are buildings that they've just built scaffolding around and they just wait for them to fall down.
Oh God.
Yeah. It's the strangest, like, you know, way to control development that I've ever seen in my life. But these buildings are kind of fascinating. And like, there are some of like, there's lots of cats in Greece. And I don't know if you know the story, but there are a lot of people who apparently abandon pets but the rest of the city takes care of them, but doesn't necessarily invite them back into their house. So there's these really friendly, well-fed cats everywhere. They don't have rabies. They're all, you know, kind of taken care of. It's just nobody spays or neuters. So then there's more of them. And so like we encountered this cat and we called him in his kitty condo that, you know, in New York City, you probably would have paid $200,000 for minimum, no windows, no doors. Yeah. But, you know, this basically ruins of a building. And he's just sitting up there like the king of the hill. And, it, you know, he's got a vantage point over everybody. I'm assuming it's a he. Could have been a she. I don't know. Just looking down on everybody. So it's a thriving city. It's not a rich city by any means. It's not an expensive city by any means. Greece has had a lot of economic troubles. You know, a bottle of water is 50 cents. And it is a fixed thing. The government thinks that's a basic need, so they won't let anybody, you know, in general, there are special rules for, you know, touristy places, but, so bottle of water is 50 cents. You can get a glass of wine for $3.50. I mean, it's really, and that I'm quoting that in euros, but that right now it's almost even, euro to dollar. So very affordable, to be there, but, yeah, the main draw to Athens are the old sites, you know, the Acropolis.
How are the hotels as far as?
Yeah, good. I mean, the Moxie is a fairly new hotel, so it was great. The second hotel we stayed at was a little boutique hotel, brand new, called Home and Poetry. That was clearly it's a strange name, but basically it was an old house that they converted, and then all the rooms are named after famous, not necessarily poets, but artists from Greece. It's very quaint, and you know,
I mean cost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Like cost per night.
Yeah. No, I would say it's reasonable. I mean, I would say that it's probably the same as like Raleigh or, you know, places like that where people do come there, but don't necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily a huge draw. Athens is a huge draw, obviously. But now if you want to stay at one of the 5-star hotels, the Grand Britannia or the King George, then you will pay a pretty penny for sure. But, you know, serious uptick in services as well. So, but if, as long as you're staying in that city center somewhere, you can find things at a decent price. I mean, we had two hotel rooms at both, hotels, so clearly very affordable. And I did not use a travel agent discount. There wasn't one available. So I did look, there wasn't one available. So
where did you stay on Crete?
So on Crete, my sister very wisely chose the Blue Palace, which is in the Marriott Luxury Collection. It's nice. Everyone that I've talked to in the industry who's been to Crete knows this hotel. And they're like, oh, it's such a beautiful hotel. And it truly is beautiful. It's located in Alunda, and it has a very clear view of a little island called Spinalongo, which at the turn of the 20th century was a leper colony. But it's been used for many, it was a fort before then. So you can actually take a little boat over, and there's a ferry that goes, as well, but from the hotel, from the Blue Palace, you can actually just request that a motorboat take you across. Little motorboat will just zip you across. You can hike around there. You can go through all the old buildings. There's a little gift shop and restaurant over there. We didn't actually like go hiking, because, you know, this is me, but we did take a little boat ride around it, and we did that through. And here's a good idea for pricing. So we're staying at a Luxury Collection hotel. The hotel is not cheap, but it wasn't too bad. And we, of course, because we're a great agency, had a great group rate for this, but the I went to see if we could get a boat for a couple of hours, you know, just a little, do a little water tour. And when you do a private charter of a boat, I mean, I'm expecting to pay between $500 and $1,000 easily. So it's a 2-hour minimum. So for 2 hours, it was 270 euro.
Wow.
So less than $300.
Wow.
And you could have up to 300, up to 30 people on the boat. I almost said 300.
30 people.
Yeah. It was a decent size. I wouldn't have wanted 30 people on it. That would have been really crowded. Once I found that out, I invited people. And so we had about 17 people on the boat with us. And that was the perfect size. I bought 3 bottles of wine, a little bit of water, and they took us out to a little swimming place where you could swim out to a rock and hang out and see some of the caves and then get back on the boat. And so some of us got in the water, some of us drank wine on the boat. And then we went back, and it was great. It's one of these, it's in a style. I thought he said kayak, which is apparently something, it's close to the word kayak, but it's not a kayak. Cause he was like, well, we have a kayak. I'm like, nope. He said, no, not the kind you row. It's apparently like a Greek fishing ship that it's styled after. This, I don't think this particular one was actually ever used for fishing, but it's that sort of style. But you know, very nice. So some of the wedding guests earlier had chartered a yacht, which through the hotel, they own these or they cooperate. I don't know exactly what the relationship is. And they said it was more expensive than that, but it was a yacht. So we didn't need a yacht. We just wanted to go out and take some pictures and get on the water because it's so beautiful. I also did a site inspection of the domes. Oh, excuse me. I'm still a little jet lagged. Sorry. The Domes Alunda, which is right next door. And that is a part of the Marriott Autograph Collection. That one's a little bit more family friendly. The Blue Palace does not have any rooms with two beds. Everything has one bed. So kind of like, you know, sandals or whatever. But they do have rollaway beds. So if you had three people in the room, or if you had people who didn't want to sleep in the same bed, they could bring in a rollaway. So we had two rooms. The entry level rooms do not have a private pool, but most of the other room categories do have a private pool.
Wow.
And it's an infinity pool with a view of the Spinalonga Island and the, you know, the bay there. So really,
wait, the Blue Palace or the Domes?
Blue Palace.
Oh, okay.
And the Domes, they are family friendly. So they have room. They have mostly suites with like a bedroom and then a room with a fold out couch, okay, and can sleep up to four in general. And then sometimes five with a roll away or with a crib. But most of those didn't have pools. A lot of those had jacuzzis. And actually, when we were there, which was the beginning of October, it was chilly enough that the pools at the Blue Palace were kind of cold. So we didn't really swim. And the jacuzzi would have been really nice. But then in the middle of the summer, that pool would have been much better than the jacuzzi. So reasons, you know, both ways to do either one. Obviously, the Blue Palace is a little bit more special to me now because my sister got married there. But I think both were very beautiful properties, and I wouldn't, you know, shy away from either one of them. So
let's finish with Crete before we go back to Athens.
Yeah.
So did you do anything besides the wedding stuff besides you did the boat tour?
Yeah, just the boat tour. And I took an hour to go over to the other hotel. The kids really wanted a chance to relax. You know, we had this beautiful scenery. No, we really didn't. Monday night, there was a dinner, a welcome dinner, and it was actually about 45 minutes away from the hotel. We were all bused over to this restaurant in a nearby town that was gorgeous on the water, and a lot of food, like so much food. I actually joked with my sister. I was like, when they showed you the menu, did you just say yes? And she's like, no, we actually took things off of it. But it was kind of a tapas style dinner. And of course, in Greece, the food is always a star. So then the wedding was Tuesday. So I did the site inspection in the morning, got my hair and makeup done. You know, we did the wedding thing. And then on Wednesday, there was a brunch for the wedding and wedding guests. And then we did the boat in the afternoon. And so that's sort of where I kind of feel like I made a mistake in the way I planned this, because then, you know, we did a 3-hour tour in Athens on the first day, and that's really all we did. And then we slept. So had we just gone straight to Crete, then on Monday before the dinner, we could have gone to the Palace of Knossos. I mean, we could have done something further away. Alunda doesn't have as much of the like tourist things, the museums and things. So we would have had to actually go off site, and we just didn't have time. We didn't have a full day to do that. But we would have had that had we come in on Sunday. So we could have used the day on Monday to do that. You know, hindsight, yeah. 2020 and all that.
So do you think Crete is the type of place you could spend like a week or
Okay. And many people do. I mean, it's the second biggest airport in Greece. The first being Athens. It attracts a lot of European tourists. Actually, since I did the site inspection at Alunda at Domes, I was able to ask the question of like, what's your typical ratio of tourists? A lot of English, a lot of French, a lot of German, some Scandinavian in different times, some Russians. And then Americans. So, and they said they do get a few more Americans than some other resorts on Crete might get because they're part of Marriott, you know, they're managed by Marriott. But not necessarily. So definitely an international, definitely something that most North Americans don't do. So something you might want to consider if you're going to Greece and want to do something different. It's an easy ferry ride from Santorini. So a lot of the wedding guests went to Santorini after the wedding. They took the ferry and stayed there a few days. I would highly recommend it. I don't know what the extent of the damage is from the flooding, but I would expect that there will be a high priority on fixing it back up again because a lot of money comes in there.
So popping back over to Athens, if my math is correct, you would go back Wednesday?
Thursday
through Saturday.
Yeah,
okay.
The wedding was Tuesday. So, so Thursday we did the hour back to the airport, flew the hour to Athens, took the transfer an hour from the Athens airport. And this time we stayed at the Home and Poetry, which is actually if we were to leave our hotel and turn right, we were looking right at Hadrian's Arch, which is where the Temple of Zeus is. We were about two blocks from Syntagma Square and the Changing of the Guard. And then if we turned left, we were in the Plaka, which is the old neighborhood, and the Acropolis is sort of, you know, we were on one side of the Acropolis.
Is the Acropolis where you told the story of whenever you went with your parents and you called it a big pile of rocks?
No, that's the Roman Forum. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't go to Greece until I was in my 20s the first time. But the Acropolis is the place where when you go up to the top and you're looking at the Parthenon. Sorry, I almost said Pantheon because that's what's in Rome. When you're looking at the Parthenon, they'll basically say, if you would like to see that structure, it's in the British Museum. And if you'd like to see that structure, it's also in the British Museum. And if you like, because it was looted basically by a British gentleman who came over to help them restore it, and he ended up taking a lot. And so it is in the British Museum now, and they've asked for it back. And they asked for it back a while ago, and the British Museum said, well, we're keeping it safe in our museum. You don't have a state-of-the-art museum to put it in. Talk to us when you do. So they built a beautiful museum and said, hey, can we have our stuff back? And they're like, no. You can come see it anytime, though. Well, it's free to visit the British Museum.
When I can visit Ellie in London, I'll go look at it.
There's a big room. I mean, it's like they're not hiding it. That's sort of what they say. It's like it's here for everyone to see. So actually, the museum, the Acropolis Museum is basically a museum built on protest. So they do have the original caryatids, which are the statues that hold up one of the temples that's on the Acropolis. And they have all of them but one, and that one is in the British Museum. So they've arranged them as if they were in, you know, holding up. They've put them in their original positions, and there's a block where the one that's at the British Museum is supposed to be. They've left a space for it. So there's a lot of things like that where it's just sort of this silent protest.
This feels bitter.
Yeah, and just it should a little be. Bit. I mean, you think about how valuable all of that is and how proud the Athenians are of it and the Greeks in general. And it's all sitting in the museum in London, you know, which is far away from them. So, yeah.
It's funny because it's like things like that are things that I think the last century people just didn't really consider that why is that messed up? I think now people are like, wait, that's messed up. You know?
Yeah. It was kind of finders keepers. Oh, it definitely is. And you'll see, I mean, there's more and more people are putting pressure on, well, let's face it, the British Museum to return stuff that isn't theirs. Yeah. But you know, the argument is it's a museum. It belongs to everyone. Yeah, but it really belongs more to the Greeks than it does to you. So, yeah. And I've always sort of felt like, you know, when I first heard that in 1998, I'm like, this is not right. But it's, you know, I just went to Turin this summer and we talked about on the podcast, the second most important collection of Egyptian artifacts is in this museum in Turin, Italy.
Yeah.
You know, the first most important museum is the one in Cairo, but there is absolutely no reason that Italy should have so much of this, but it's because an Italian went down and took stuff.
Stole it.
Yeah. I mean, he was
European
exploring.
Colonialism. Yeah.
Yeah, he was exploring. Well, right. You know, as an American, I'm sure that, you know, as an American, I don't have a whole lot of rights to say that I'm not a Native American. And so, you know, we've all stolen over the years, I suppose, but yeah, it is something that could be righted pretty easily.
I hope we're moving towards that.
I think they're raising, this museum is really just gorgeous. I was so impressed with it because it obviously wasn't there when I was there in 1998. But yeah, we came back on Thursday. We had a nice reservation for dinner, which by the way, my husband made for 5:30. And I told him, I was like, the Greeks eat late. We were the only people in the restaurant the whole time. I was actually surprised that it was even open that early. So if you go to Greece, expect to eat at 8 or later. Most Greeks, it's more like 9, 9:30.
I think that's Europe in general. Chris said that in London and Paris too, when he was just there.
Yes, it is. It is European, but it's especially true in Greece because it's so hot. You know, nobody wants to eat. So their whole day is sort of shifted because of that. So, you know, they tend not to eat breakfast and, you know, then they'll eat a later lunch, sort of a snacky lunch. They'll eat a snack and then a lunch. And then, so they've eaten lunch at like 2 or 3. And so then dinner. And some of that too, like their schools don't serve lunch. So the kids get out at 2. So that's when they eat their lunch. Mm-hmm. So things like, you know, these all sorts of cultural things that happen. But then on Friday, we did the smart thing because I'm a good travel advisor. And we did the very early morning tour of the Acropolis. So we had to be at the office for the tour at 7:45. We walked up to the Acropolis by ourselves. There was nobody else there. When we came back down, there were like hundreds of people coming up.
Were there ships in port or were there?
Very likely. Very likely. It was a Friday and some of the ships, I know, we ran into a couple at our hotel that were getting on Azamara on Saturday. So,
that's kind of a small ship though.
That is a small ship. Well, and of course the port is so far away that I can't see the ships, you know, the port's quite a way. The city is so big, but honestly, just tons and tons of tourists. I mean, it was just a lot of people. So we did that first thing, went to the museum after that. And then in the evening, we did a food and wine tour, which was delightful. So
did your tour guides have any opinions on like cruise ships, tourists, and like how? Okay. Well, that's good.
Okay. If they did, we certainly didn't talk about it. And again, we didn't have any reason to because there was no, like, cruise ships were not affecting me in general on that trip. Right. But I will say that that Greece is built on tourism, 100%. So they will take whatever they can get. Now, if you ask somebody on Santorini, there might be a different opinion. But Athens and Crete, honestly, is big enough that it spreads out the, you know, where we were, nobody from a cruise ship was going to come.
I think, I think COVID really made a lot of places appreciate tourists again too. So hopefully tourists like do their due diligence and are good stewards of the places they visit.
Hopefully.
Surely they are, right? Yeah. We'll learn our lessons. All right, cool. Okay. So talk about the food and wine tour.
So honestly, it was simple but good. We started with a gyro. We'll one day learn to pronounce that correctly. At quote the best place for gyros. We learned a little bit how they're made and what makes this one better than all the others. And it's basically the cuts of meat that they use. Then after that, we went to a wine bar and did a wine tasting of Greek wines. We had 5 different Greek wines, 2 whites, 2 reds, and a dessert wine. The kids actually tried wine for the first time, so they felt very grown up. Although Marcus was like, eh. And then, then we had an actual dinner. They took us to a restaurant and we could order 1 of 5 items. And it's a restaurant that serves traditional Greek food, but with a modern twist. So something that all Greeks would eat, but then they do something different with it. So, the lamb stew might have a different ingredient in it or whatever, or the braised lamb, I should say, that lamb stew isn't their thing. Stews are not really a Greek kind of thing. I had risotto because I always have risotto and it was absolutely delicious. Our tour guides were so knowledgeable in all 3 tours. The guy on the food tour though seemed to know something about everything. Like you could ask him pretty much anything, like about anything from shoes to Greek history, and he knew the answer. Very, very smart guy. And we tried ouzo, which is the Greek aperitif. It's the, it's the thing that everybody does when they go to Greece. So it gave us a really good, well-rounded way to end. And I was kind of hoping it would go a little bit later into the evening, but we were tired and the kids really were, we were full and done, kind of like how you do on a cruise ship where you're like, I'm going to stay up all night. And then you eat dinner and you're like, I'm so full. I'm so
tired.
And we had to fly out the next day as well. So honestly, it was a great way to end the trip. I think it would have been an excellent way to start the trip too, but I didn't start it that way because I knew we would have some jet lag. And so I wanted to make sure if we had the ability to stay up all night, we could do that, So overall, the only thing that I really feel I did wrong on this trip was I really would have just moved what we did on Sunday to Thursday. And I would have just gone straight to Crete, and tried to get more out of that. That said, if we hadn't been going to a wedding, we had plenty of time on Crete. We would have been able to do quite a few things and then, and then leave. But
yeah. So what, for the kids' perspective, was there anything that really stood out to them?
Honestly, not so much. I think that they were expecting the city to be different. They've been to Paris, they've been to London, they've been to New York, they've been to LA. So I think that they sort of were expecting a little bit more of those type of cities. And Athens isn't really that. It's such a working city. They were really interested in the history and the walking tour that we did on Sunday. It was based in mythology. So there was a lot of storytelling that went with it. And of course the gods are very, interesting because they do all sorts of crazy things. And so it was really cool to sort of see the city of Athens through those stories. And that guide again was super knowledgeable and was able to speak directly to them and to their interests. And so, Finley had some questions about some of the souvenirs that were around because the Greeks are sort of different in some ways, and he was able to answer and he knew all the American sensibilities. So that was really great. They also really loved the food. Marcus has always been a big tzatziki fan, and to have the real thing, heroes as well, to be able to, eat the real version of Greek food that we have Greek food here, and he was able to have the real thing. And they even were sort of fascinated by the connection to the Ottoman Empire and how Greece is European, but is really more tied to Asia than it is. A lot of the food and culture is tied more to Asia than it is to Europe, to Western Europe. So, they really enjoyed it. They loved the water. They loved the island. I think they definitely all want to go back. So it's something where I was afraid they would be bored, going to see a bunch of rocks on top of a hill. although to be fair, the Parthenon is, in very good shape, all things considered, you can see what it was for sure. It's not rocks laying around on the ground. So
this is, my husband's number one bucket list place.
Yeah,
because and all because of the mythology. He's always been into mythology.
So. Yeah, my husband has wanted to go since we got married, and we've talked about almost every time we go to Europe, it comes up as a possibility for the place to go, and then we don't go.
Yeah.
So this was I sort of feel like my sister forced our hand.
She finally got you back there since the 90s. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was someplace she had never been, which if you know my sister, it always shocks me when there's a place she hasn't been.
Yeah. Especially a place that's kind of a place people know about, it's kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But she is more of an off the beaten path kind of traveler. I mean,
All right, cool. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. On behalf of Donna, Elizabeth, George, and myself, Sandy, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly!